I'm Judy Aker. So if this is where you want to be, you're in the right place. If not, you better go. I'm a nurse midwife by profession. I am living in Quito, Ecuador. I've been there for 2 years. And I'm there because my husband, Jerry, is the Andean Regional Director for Lutheran World Relief. But that's his job, not mine. But if you have questions in that direction, I can go that way too. But we have lived and worked in, mostly in Latin America, Central America and South America. Also spent a couple of years in Vietnam. And in all these places I've been involved in some health programs and some type of medical sorts of things. And the title of my session, Health for All and All in the Andes. I put that question, if you may have heard Health for All, the rest of it is Health for All by the end of the century. This is the United Nations, one of their little goals that they have. And I have a question about that. I think it's a good goal, but we've only got about a decade left. And so I thought that it might be a good idea to explore this a little bit and get some of your feelings about what this means, health for all. And I want you to do a little tripping with your imaginations and think about a few real life situations in an Andean country. It can be Ecuador, but it could be Bolivia, it could be Peru. And I'd like you to, it's not going to be a complicated thing, it's just sort of an everyday sort of situation. Every day for them, not for us. And I think with us here in Holden Village, we can maybe think about this a little easier. Because if we had an emergency up here or something happened medically, you know, we couldn't just dial 911. And we'd have to do a little more planning and thinking about if we had an injury or if somebody had a heart attack or something like this here in Holden. But don't get freaked out about it because there is a nurse here. And we've got the first aid station, and there really is a plan, even for evacuation if this is necessary. So folks feel pretty good about being here, but it is different. It's not like being back home. And so maybe your imaginations have a little help when you're sitting in Holden and thinking about something else. The first thing I want you to think about is to imagine another mountain village. It's again not exactly like Holden. There's a cluster of a few buildings. There's a school and a church and a community building, not exactly like the village center, and a lot of scattered humble homes. I mean, they're really just huts. In Narnia this morning, the kid said, "Oh, you mean like a cottage?" Well, not exactly. it's sort of like a settlement. There are several other places around on the hillsides, about seven of them, and this makes up what they call their community. And it's a little bit below, not too far below the snow line, on the slopes of Chimborazo, which is the giant of the Andes, a huge volcano. But Chimborazo is 19,000 feet, and this village is up higher than the peak of Bonanza here. And it's pretty barren, kind of bleak and chilly, if not cold. In this village, Soila is a smiling 20-year-old woman. She's an Indian woman. and she's the community health worker. She's very enthusiastic and wants to help her community. She's taken a couple of courses. She serves for the health post, which is another small building in the community. It's pretty barren, too. There's only a few very basic supplies. The government is supposed to supply this little post. And there's also a government doctor who is supposed to visit, but it's rather rare to see the doctor in this isolated post. Once they had an immunization campaign in the village, but this was really before Soyla was a health worker, and now she doesn't have any kind of supplies or medicines to give immunizations. But she has taken these courses, 2 one-week courses she's had, and they were given by a doctor from Quito who works with an organization called Pastoral Rural Ecuatoriana, PRE, which is rural Pastors of Ecuador. And this is an agency which is funded by Lutheran World Relief. Well, if we go down the slopes of Chimborazo a little bit further into the valleys, closer to a provincial town, there's another more prosperous farming community, and it's located in the shadow of another mountain, Cotopaxi, not as high as Chimborazo. And here, Sani is a hardworking farmer's wife. She's got 3 children. And she's very thankful that her children are pretty healthy. But this has been a struggle to get any kind of health care. The village does have a health clinic, and it's on a higher level than this other little village. And it's staffed by a newly graduated doctor who is obligated to work in the rural area before taking his exams or her exams and going into private practice. But the doctor changes yearly and never lives in this community. And really, there is no supervision, no one that says he's got to be there. And so the posted days and hours aren't necessarily kept. And definitely, there's no doctor around nights and weekends when it seems like emergencies with children always happen. Then let's go on the other side, down into the jungle. Amelia is a teenage bride. She lives far away from the mountains in an Indian village in the hot Amazon jungle. She'll soon give birth to her first baby. She and her husband thought of going into Quito to a trained midwife and where well-supplied and equipped hospitals would be close. But that's very strange to Amelia, and she wants to stay in her village where people speak her own language and where she knows everyone. Her grandmother will help her with the birth, as she has with so many other births, and it'll be in the tradition of the tribe. If there's a complication or any problem, well, she'll just have to be taken by dugout canoe to the hospital, which is several hours away down the river. So, okay, thank you. So that's just a little sample of some health situations in Ecuador. These 3 are in Ecuador, but as I said, they could be in other Andean countries. And so I'd like to hear from you any of the questions that you have, but I'd like us to kind of think about how we relate to health problems beyond our borders. And the contrast of our medical systems and the health care to what we get as compared to 2/3 of the rest of God's children. And if we can kind of focus on these 3 cases, what might be helpful in alleviating these conditions of poverty and the lack of health care? How would you go about making a healthy community?
Well, I just, this is a question. I know it was 2 or 3 years ago, the Bread for the World's emphasis was on immunization. And so we all wrote letters to our congressman, or any of those of us wrote letters to our congressman about the immunization for every child. And then there was a certain amount of money, you know, then they reported that a certain amount of money had been appropriated for the immunizations. And I forget what the numbers were. And I just wondered what, apparently it never got to that village in the, how do you say that,
Chimborazo.
Chimborazo.
So you've got a suggestion in terms of the immunization program. What you actively did was to write letters.
Yeah, but apparently that certainly wasn't enough. I mean, there was a bill passed and there was money appropriated, but it certainly wasn't enough.
But there were probably some that were immunized in some programs.
As a result of that. But we could still.
But we've got a decade left.
I had a question about the immunization program, too. I don't know that much about the government in Ecuador. Maybe you could enlighten us and me about that, to know exactly what kind of an organized effort there was and is about programs such as immunization.
Well, Ecuador is similar in some ways and different than others. All of these governments, you know, have their own similarities. It's like in the States. You may have a campaign in one state, but it's not necessarily for the whole country. And Ecuador does have immunizations, but one of the big causes of infant mortality are the various communicable diseases, which are preventable. And as I mentioned, in this one village, they had an immunization campaign some time back.
But she doesn't have the medicines now. I mean, she
there was no
have
follow.
A well baby clinic.
Well, it seems to me when we're talking about two areas here, and both of them need our help, obviously, one directly and one, well, maybe quite directly too, but perhaps there is something we can do directly to help these people in a community, adopt, name it, whatever. I know that's been done a lot. And it's a continuing thing, and it is where one takes the responsibility for a particular clinic. I know places in Mexico where this is being done, at least to provide certain things, medicines, name it, you know, whatever it might be, whatever the commitment is for. The other is bigger, and I think that we need to work through our government to put some ties on the money. We're giving money to almost all countries, and that money ought to be tied to a certain program. There's no reason why we can't have them tied to health programs. The money goes usually for defense or whatever they want. And I think that we ought to be putting more pressure to have these type of programs tied to some of the money that we give.
So your idea is some form of support to a specific clinic, or being able to suggest to our government that they put this money into health care instead of military.
Each numbers over the world, we got to be talking about governments.
Do they have any kind of public health system, any kind of set up business?
A public health system.
Teams that would go out to villages, any type
of thing. Yes. In what I touched on in Sani's village in Cotopaxi is the program that they've got throughout Ecuador. And that is that every doctor who graduates from the medical school in Quito, and there's another one in Cuenca, so there are two medical schools in the country, and these doctors are obligated to serve in the rural area for 1 year. And after that 1 year, then they can sit for their exams, their board examinations, and be get their MD, and then go out and do whatever kind of job they can get. And this sounds pretty good, that we've got all these doctors to cover all these various health posts. But in fact, it doesn't function too well. And this is not at all fictitious, and I know many of these doctors. And it is very true in these health clinics. Their posted hours, in the first place, are very limited. Perhaps it's 8 in the morning until 11. And then again in the afternoon from 2 to 4. And maybe 3 days a week they're supposed to be there. And they might come, they won't be there at 8 o'clock in the morning, that's way too early, because they do not live in that village. These doctors want to live in a more urban setting. It's a hardship enough for them to move out of the big city where they've gone to school and go to one of these villages. So they will go to a little larger, the provincial town, and live there. And then they'll drive to this village, which may be several hours away because they're poor roads. And so when they get there, it's getting close to noon, and they're ready to have lunch. And they close the clinic, and they have their lunch. And maybe they'll open the clinic in the afternoon, but maybe they won't, because they've got to get back. And, they've got some friends getting together that night. And so they
spend their money, and they get paid for this?
Well, they get paid for it, but the pay is very slight. The biggest reason they do it is because they have to do that before they can take their exams and become an MD.
So they really don't, most of them don't have a sense of serving.
Mm-mm. And that's most of them. And I'm glad you said that word, because there are exceptions.
Is there a place for people from other countries to come in and do some of that outreach?
There is a place in terms of many of the programs that exist, missionaries that come to not only Ecuador, to other countries and all, but they do not work through the government system. It's not part of the public health system. The only way where that does work, and the government isn't, they're willing to accept volunteers and that sort of thing. And so often, for example, in this community in Chimborazo, there has been a Peace Corps nurse. And that's a two-year stint. Peace Corps has two-year terms. And this nurse has been living in this village. Unlike the doctor, she lives there. And it's not a long term, but it's longer than the doctor. The doctors usually shorten the year down to 9 months, a school year. Even though it is supposed to be a calendar year. And she stayed in the village for 2 years. She's gone now, and they didn't have a plan to replace her, but maybe there will be one. But at least she was somebody that was there all the time. And the government was perfectly happy to let her use the health post and to go in there. She would get called out at night. Those are the times when things happen. A child might have a toothache, or there might be something more serious than that. You all know that emergencies and your needs for health do not occur during certain clinic hours on certain days. And so, yes, the government is willing, and there are ways to work into the system with this. And then the days when the doctor might show up, then this nurse could, can work with that person too, and maybe come up with a little more enlightened program and encourage, for example, an immunization campaign, and go through the channels for that.
So money isn't.
Not necessarily, but
it helps.
It's one of those things.
Yes, in the back.
Okay, you've been in these places and worked in these villages. Say my church women had $200 that we wanted to send over there to one of these villages to maybe buy supplies for this nurse to work with. How would you go about it, and how would you know that what you sent would go to some village rather than go to the government who might use it to support doctors in a hospital or something, where obviously the need is in the villages for... Is there any way that you can do mm-hmm. that? How would you go about it?
It's a problem. Have any of you had any experience of this type of thing?
The money usually doesn't get through the mail system to where it's supposed to go.
Yeah. But have any of you had success in sending something to a program? Okay.
It took a great deal of work to try and find out how to get the money there. I sound like a broken record, but it was how to get money to a certain community in El Salvador. You could not send it through the mail. You could not send it through your church body. They said, well, they didn't have a way to get it there. Called the Center for Global Service. Would they be able to get it there? No, they couldn't, and they connected me with somebody in Texas. I kid you not. Mm-hmm. And they hand-delivered things for me. Mm-hmm. But I mean, mm-hmm. I really had to work.
Okay, this is a complicated system of going through several different channels to hand-deliver something. Anybody have any other experience?
How do people that, like we have Salvadoran refugees in Los Angeles, how do they get money back to their families? Do you have any idea how they do that?
Well, just briefly, I'll say that's how it usually goes, through some channel they've got.
Why can't you send through mail?
Yeah. Okay, just to address to answer more specifically and still not answer your question, it's a favorite way for people in the States to want to deliver something directly to a specific program. And there's usually not too much available to do that. And we can think about some of the reasons why that may be good or bad. You know, nothing is a straight, clear answer. But for example, Lutheran World Relief does use some designated funds. But it is difficult, even when you're going through the proper channels, to have something go to a specific place. But I think that when you're giving to something like Lutheran World Relief, you can feel a little more confident that it is going more specifically. Now, Lutheran World Relief's funds are through the hunger appeal of the ELCA, and they also get funds through Missouri Synod. And so there is a complicated channel. But people have given money, for example, to say that they want... that, you know, this is the $200 that these folks have raised, and you would like it to be given to the health work in Ecuador or the health work in South America. And then it is at times channeled in that direction. But again, it's the whole thing of a total budget and the church putting things in there. And we don't have that, and I think that it's something that is worth, if this is what your church wants to do, you know, to write, to let the church know that this is how you want to, I think we have a little better chance of doing that to our church than our government. Mm-hmm. I agree with this lady here in the front very much, that it would be so nice if we could give our taxes and say, that my taxes are to go to, you know, health care. I don't want a penny going to the military. But, you know, we can't do that. But we can do a little, we've got a little more power in doing that with our funds in the church.
Can we write a check to Lutheran World Relief and send it to New York and say you want to go towards help? And, I don't know, you don't work for them, right?
No.
And then when you write and say you wanted to go check would probably go to the hospital and not to where they really needed it.
No, not if it was going to Lutheran World Relief. No. Lutheran World Relief does not support hospitals.
So you answered my question by not answering.
Yes, there really isn't a channel for that. I don't know what they would do with your check if it arrived like that. I know some fellows in Lutheran World Relief in New York that would probably say, Judy, what did you tell these people?
I have a question.
Yes.
Can you tell me
what the gentleman here is first?
Does Lutheran World Relief receive any government funding at all?
Yes, it does. Have you read The Other Side magazine that they're passing out in the village this week? The Other Side is comparing many of the charitable agencies that some of us give our money to. And it's kind of interesting to read, and I will kind of slide over that, but because some of you may pick it up and read it, it's like anything, it's not totally good. And I have trouble with some of it. They don't give Lutheran World Relief. The high score is a 5, and Lutheran World Relief does not get a 5 in value for giving because they receive funds from the U.S. government. Most of the funds that Lutheran World Relief has received from the U.S. government have been in connection with the famine and aid in Ethiopia and Somalia and off in Africa. But in Latin America, there are USAID grants and grant money that is used. However, the way that the other side puts it without giving you any more information is that and Lutheran World Relief wasn't the only agency that got poor numbers for this. But they say that if you receive government money, you are influenced by foreign policy. And this can be true, but the funds that LWR receives from the government are not at all influenced by foreign policy. Our programs are influenced by what the people want and what they are requesting. You're working with indigenous or national agencies, organizations who aren't connected with their own governments, their private agencies. And if some funds come, say AID funds for health, you would ask this community or this agency if they want U.S. government funds. And if they say no, then those funds LWR will put in another place where the people are willing to have this tainted money.
I think it's a good thing that they give money to it, the government gives it to it.
Mm-hmm. Some of our tax dollars are going to be.
If they give it and you can use it where it should be used, why?
Mm-hmm. Well, if we go back to Bread for the World and this immunization and your letter writing, this was to encourage our government to spend their money in this way.
Sure.
And Bread for the World gets a 5 in The Other Side. And I'm happy they did, and I support Bread for the World. But Bread for the World is saying, get our government to give our money to agencies like this. And so if the agency accepts it, they don't get a 5, they get a... Excuse me, Doris was...
I was just wondering how much help you get from the university medical schools, from their research departments. In general, I know my daughter goes down to Peru every February. She teaches medicine at Johns Hopkins and works with the neurovirology research. And during February, they usually have a very severe run of the measles. And they work specifically with the hospital there in helping to immunize for measles, and also to, they also bring lots of supplies with them when they go down for the specific hospital there in Lima.
Mm-hmm.
And they work with the medical team in Lima.
I have not personally been connected with any programs like that, and Lutheran World Relief is not connected with any programs like that. I know they do exist. I'm not familiar with one in Ecuador that is direct that way in medicine. It's a great place for archaeologists, and there's a lot of U.S. programs where universities send students down for that, and there may very well be medical programs too,
well,
but I'm not aware of them.
I don't know of any other, and I was curious to know if there were other.
Oh, there are others, yes. Uh-huh.
Universities who did similar things to Johns Hopkins.
Right. Before you, we had a question over here. One of you. It was answered, okay.
I know the University of Arizona does go down into Mexico. We were in Calvert Canyon, and they have a clinic that they staff periodically there. And
where?
In Calvert Canyon in Mexico.
Mexico.
Yeah. And there are different places besides that they go to. But my other comment that I wanted to make was that instead of giving them fish, we really do need to teach them to fish for themselves, or it may be cut off, or for whatever reason they may starve again. Then we really need to. What about scholarships? What about taking a person from a village, educating them in healthcare by scholarships or something like that sort of thing, or even sponsoring a rural person at a medical school so that they will go back into the rural area where they came from. Basically, medical students in most of those countries come from the wealthy element, don't they? They are they're out of their element in this rural, rustic, beneath the type of society. And so I think that's part of the reason why the health care they give is so poor, and their understanding of the people is so uncompassionate. Mm-hmm.
Would somebody like to address this suggestion, which is to teach or give a little more education, for example, to offer a scholarship so some of these rural people can go to school, become a doctor? Okay.
I think it's a fine idea for the person who's going to receive the education, but frequently the community ends up not benefiting from it because as soon as that person has an out, they're gone.
It would have to be.
Growing up in North Dakota, we had a lot of foreign medical grads who would come in, and North Dakota, whole as it is still better than whatever.
Okay.
Hard to get them to go back.
If we can keep thinking that we're addressing this to the end of the century or the beginning of the next, whichever, if you like end or beginning better.
You're going to have us so depressed, we'll just
say,
there's not a thing we can do, why bother?
No, there's things you can do. I'm sorry. Go ahead. You're next. In the white blouse here.
Well, it would seem to me, too, along the same lines, but on a little different level, maybe being able to find people within the community who are committed to the community and know the needs of the community, and then doing some kind of training for those people who would be interested in, like, the health worker that you were talking about. A paramedical or somebody who's going to be staying there.
Mm-hmm. You're after my own heart. A health worker. I think she was next.
How hard is it to educate the people themselves in being responsible for their own health? Or in incorporating some of their, you know, which of the folk medicines really are good and which aren't? I mean, is that I have no idea how receptive they are.
Okay, she wants to know how hard it is to teach these health workers.
No, or the people, just the whole
or
community.
Or the community in health. Yeah.
Another daughter of mine went down to Ghana, and her job was to teach one person who could teach the natives, because she spoke both languages. Our daughter taught in English, and then she taught this one worker who, in turn, took the knowledge along to the grassroots, you might say, and taught the natives. And she felt that was very effective.
Is that a problem with not having enough instructors and not having enough?
Yeah. There is not a lot of health person, not a lot of health personnel or instructors. Did you have?
I was thinking about, and I don't remember where I saw this, but the barefoot doctor approach, where there is someone that is possibly a physician, but who is also trained in the herbal medicine approach of the indigenous culture, and they have the responsibility for training people within each village to incorporate the Western traditions with their
medicine. Yeah, the barefoot doctor approach.
Is that implemented at all in Ecuador?
In answering this and kind of going around the bush too, if we can go back to Amelia, the Indian girl who's expecting her baby and doesn't want to go into the hospital, that she wants to stay in her village and really have her baby in a traditional Indian sort of way. And how do you work in this community? How do you teach
what
them?
What kind of care would she get? I mean, would it be just, are there...
Let me come back to that, because I still want to address what we're talking about here. How hard is it, and what are some of the... And I think you've come up with some good ideas, and we've heard something that is going on, a way of teaching others. Do any of you have any other thoughts that you think might work or that you've heard about?
Does the Catholic Church get involved in any of these kinds of things with using their priests in their institutions?
Lutheran World Relief in most countries, and certainly in Ecuador, have a very good working relationship with Catholic Relief Services. And it's... basically the same type of a thing. It's a development agency for the Catholic Churches of the United States, just like Lutheran World Relief or the Lutheran Churches of the United States, not necessarily of the world. And Catholic Relief does get involved in the same types of programs and projects.
And do they get good support, though, from the Catholic parishes there?
Yes and no. It varies. It's all the same things.
Part of what brought this to my mind is working in Los Angeles, a number of the black people who, quote, made it into public service jobs went to Catholic schools in the inner cities. Of course, they've made it to middle class, and now they're not so anxious to be working in the ghetto anymore. I was wondering, that's why.
Not to answer your question, because I don't think that there is any... answer, and in the countries that I've worked in, there's been different solutions and different ways of approaching it, and to make you feel a little better that some things do work. I'm still pessimistic about health for all by the end of the century, but I think that there are things that are happening that are very optimistic. For example, with these health workers that we're now working with, yes, we like immunization programs, and they're still encouraged. But if you're thinking of a more long-term thing, we're much more apt to teach young women like Soyla not how to give shots and immunizations, but how to work with these women, for example, when their children come into these health posts. Usually they will bring their sick child, but the other kids tag along, and the other kids aren't sick. They don't have the problem that, you know, whatever Susie has. And so you talk with these, and they've got waiting rooms, maybe not waiting rooms, but waiting space, sitting outside, and the mothers all sit and talk. And so you work with these, give them, Soyla and others like her, some skills to talk about these things. And what did you fix your family for breakfast this morning? And well, did you have such and such available? And do you know that the Peace Corps worker in the next community is teaching you or is are or working with the women on how to cook one of these vegetables that you don't usually use, but which you can grow here. And then you find out that Maria is doing, she took care of her child that had this same problem by giving them whatever this is. And so you enforce this stuff that's good. It might not have anything to do with your ideas that you're bringing down from your university or anything else. But if it has worked in this community with this child, and it's amongst these women, and that's a good idea. You reinforce what they are doing that works. Mm-hmm. And you don't try to say, well, yeah, but I think you really should teach your children to wash their hands every time they go to the bathroom. Mm-hmm. I mean, this is how we're going to stop all this business. And let's get some screens on your windows so we keep the flies out. And you've got these ideas, and they're good ideas. And yes, they probably would work. But no, they're not going to work if it's so foreign to these people. And if Amelia really doesn't want to come in to Quito to a midwife, I mean, a midwife is a little more acceptable than going to a doctor. If she still is going to stay in her Indian village, then, you know, go to the village and find out what grandma does. What is she doing when she delivers these babies? And, you know, have the babies she delivered live, at least as far as the birthing process is concerned? Well, let's find out what she's doing and see if she's teaching somebody else in the village to do those same things. And if she's doing something that's dangerous, if she's taking an old dirty butcher knife to cut the baby's cord and that baby is dying of tetanus, well, then let's interfere in some way and get them to understand that there is another way to do that, that there's another village down the way that boils this knife before they cut it. Mm-hmm. And their babies aren't dying of this terrible disease. Mm-hmm. And it's slow, it's not fast, mm-hmm. but it's a little bit more acceptable and it's more on their level. Because if you're not going to get these Amelias to come into Quito, and you certainly aren't going to get the doctors out there in the village, there's another way of doing it. And if Soyla is really anxious and want, if she's taking the initiative to do some of these health courses, then let's not get her hung up on needing this medicine for these immunizations. If the government gets their act together and they're going to bring an immunization campaign, all right, we'll teach Soyla how to give those shots. You know, that can be done. But let's give her some skills that she can use every day, on weekends and at the night in her community.
But you're not saying don't write.
I'm not saying.
And I
think every one of your ideas are good, and we can put some more up there.
What level of education, or who would do the teaching of the Soyla in that at that level, and what they need? I mean, who would implement that, or how individually, or through people like you that are already there? I mean, how?
Okay, now we've got a partial solution. How are we going to take care of the rest of it? Who's going to work with the granny midwives out in the jungle, and who's going to teach these village health workers?
Well, doesn't the granny midwife have to want some help first?
Okay.
So how do you get them to want help?
Well, the only thing that I would know is if you said, well, there's somebody in the next village and their babies are living, not dying. But I don't know. Maybe the granny's jealous of people in the next village.
Would we have to find somebody that they would trust to the point that they would accept help from them?
There are some.
You mentioned the people.
How important is their religion in their life and their religious leader? Is that a big area where a big influence in their life that through them? Or, I mean, I'm thinking of the old idea of the witchcraft business and all that business, and some good, some bad, as far as the herbal and all that sort of thing goes. A lot of it fake and meaningless, but how important is that influence in their life?
Okay, so the question is, what's the religious influence? And I think what you were also saying, tying in with that, is some of their spiritual beliefs,
yes. Mm-hmm.
Or traditional beliefs. Mm-hmm. This area is, again, sort of like a whole new ball game. And we go back to the barefoot doctor concept. Mm-hmm. And there are things being done. Again, I can, and just a little hopeful thing, and one of the things that's happening, actually, in many of the Andean countries with the indigenous people, it's a similar thing with the Indians in the United States, North American Indians, being a little bit more aware of or wanting to have some identification with their roots and the fact that they are North American Indians, that they're not another branch of another immigrant group. And I think that this is much of what is happening in South America, and they're aiming very much toward and talking about 500 years, because it'll soon be 500 years since Columbus made his little sail across the sea and being followed by the conquistadores and all that whole legacy. And so the indigenous people are becoming much more aware of what is happening and going on around them, some more than others. And one particular group in Ecuador, which is more aware and getting much more involved, are the Otobalan Indians. The Otobalans are an Indian group that live, that are north of Quito. And so I kind of put them in the Sierra. I don't know if you can kind of picture the map. Ecuador is almost like a triangle, and Quito is just about in the center, so you go a little more north into the mountains, not down into the jungle. And this group has some reputation going back to the conquest, not of the Spanish, but of the Incas. The Inca Empire spread throughout the Andes from Chile all the way up to Colombia, with its beginnings in Peru. And they conquered Indian tribes all along the line. But the Otobalans were ones that they could not conquer by one of the Incas' favorite methods, which was to intermarry. They kind of took care of a lot of tribes that way. And they just, by sheer force, had to overcome the Inca, the Otobalans. So the Otobalans are very proud of that, that they were one of the last tribes subdued, and that they fought all the way, and they did to death, yes. And the way that, because intermarriage wouldn't work, it still doesn't work. The Otobalans are a very pure tribe. You rarely hear of an Otobalan that's married to a Spaniard or now down the line a further mixed Latin American. And so if you can picture that type of pride, it's very easy to see why they have are kind of in the forefront in Ecuador. And part of it is their medical care. They are concerned about what their villages are getting and how they're left out of the system. And they don't, they're not very happy with a foreign doctor that comes in to teach them something or to be around. So they have, and through help, not just on their own, there have been different missionary groups and different agencies who have worked with some communities. It's not a, a nation, a tribal sort of thing. It is still in bits and pieces. And so that some of their people have been able to go to school and get an education and become doctors. But I think the exciting thing with them is that they have continued to reinforce what they believe. And they've got, for example, a clinic in Otobalo, which is sort of their main city. And this clinic is, it's an exciting place to visit and see what they're doing, because they've got an Otobalan doctor who's been trained at the medical school in Quito, and they've also got your witch doctor, or what you say, they call him a curandero, or a healer, and these two people have a clinic together. And they talk with one another, and within their if somebody comes that's ill, and they kind of question the person what they have taken or what they're interested in taking, what they know about, and so they collaborate. And sometimes these people can leave with a prescription for penicillin and a little bag of herbs or whatever, and so they have. They have implemented, if you like, their what they've already got with the traditional medicine, but they haven't given up their back. And this is very good, and there's been a lot of that going on, even with some programs, like with programs that Lutheran World Relief is funding, this the one that I mentioned that has this health work, the PRE, it's easier, the Ecuadorian pastors, they have been studying. This particular doctor went to Quito, to Cusco, to a conference there on using these folk medicines and learning more about herbs and plants and different things that these healers or these witch doctors, if you will use, because it's a combination of using a lot of this stuff. Again, it's just another small little thing that's happening, but it is happening.
What would you like to see happening, you being there as a person? We can sit and talk about all this, you know, what the health programs and all that, but you've been there. What would you like to see happening? And just as a person outside of World Relief or anything like that, just mm-hmm. as a nurse midwife.
Well, I think a very important thing that I would like to see happen in the United States, and especially within my church, within the fold of Christianity, is kind of a turning of the mind. I think what we did last night here at Holden is just kind of a sample, this hunger awareness meal. But I think that that's what it takes. It's got to be much more of it. But the more church members and Christians, and especially in the United States, that become aware of what's going on in two-thirds of the rest of the world, and that their lifestyles adjust to this, I think it does help. It is just a slow beginning, but we really do have to have a change of mind. As Christians, that shouldn't be hard to identify with, because we say that we are saved, that we repent. And repent means a turning around.
Okay, and then when you're in these countries and you go to villages, what would you like to see happening in these villages?
Well, I like to see when I visit things like that are being where people are aware of, like in this particular Otavalan clinic, where they do have some new skills and they have had some education, but that they haven't given up on their old things. And there are things that have happened in these villages that I think are exciting. Sani in the Cotopaxi village, she is very aware and she's gone, her children are older, you know, she's made it through without losing these, you know, a child before 5 years of age. Her oldest is 16, I think, and her youngest is 9 years old. But she has, because she's so concerned about the health and that this clinic is not functioning very well, she has a group of women, and she's a Christian, and they meet for Bible study and prayer, but she has put in this health element. And she has these women talking about health problems, and well, what do you do when, you know, when so-and-so wakes up in the night, and people have come, you know, other mothers have come to her, and so she realizes that they've got these problems. And so their conscience is being raised. And that's just a little bit. I mean, what I would like to see is a community that does have, you know, that's a healthy community. And that's many more aspects than what we're talking about. And that's why I don't really believe at this end of the century that there's going to be health for all. But I hope that more people do have some form of health. We haven't even touched on one of the things I said, let's compare our systems. At the risk of being bombarded or something, I don't think we need all the intensive care nurseries that we've got in this country. And I'm a nurse midwife. I have worked in these intensive care nurseries, and I know what it means to save a small, tiny baby's life. That's very important. But at the risk of billions and billions of dollars that we put into health care, and Amelia doesn't even have an extra dollar. And she did have complications. I said that as if she was expecting her baby. She's had her baby. And she did have complications, and she did have to go in the dugout canoe. And so if there could be, it's like we say, there's food for all, but it's a matter of getting it to the people. And it's complicated. I'm not saying that each one of us can solve any one of these problems. And just because I'm there, I'm not solving those problems either. But I keep praying, and I'm aware of my lifestyle, and I do think it makes a difference. Because eventually, you know, change comes slow. It doesn't come fast. And I think the education is important, but not just for them.
We don't have health for all in our own country.
That's right. That's right.
So there are some priorities that we do have to examine, I think, in the medical field. I just got back into nursing a couple of years ago and was shocked that it's not like I thought that I had been reading about. And I'll have to say that I've been working around the country at several places as an agency nurse and a surgeon. And if I were to be very, very frank, I would say that half of our medicine goes right down the grade.
Mm-hmm.
Half of our money that goes into medicine goes right down the grade.
Mm-hmm.
And there's got to be something wrong with that, where you have all of these things in prevention and in the future, where we really need to put our emphasis someplace mm-hmm. else. I'm not sure exactly how, but that was a big shock.
Yes. Well, and I don't want to leave you on a note of a feeling it's overwhelming. It is overwhelming. But I think that there is something we can do. And I think the experience of living at Holden is kind of if not a beginning, some of you, I'm sure, have been here more than once. But it's kind of a mindset or an attitude to keep with you. I was with the kids in Narnia this morning, and that's an important place to be. Your children have to become aware that there are other lifestyles. Even, you know, it sounds like a simple thing, just, you know, not to flush the toilet every time you use it or something like this, but it is a lifestyle, and it's something that we have to begin to turn around in the United States, that it doesn't go on forever, and where else do you start but with your children? And the children are a big influence. We didn't talk about that, but there are other health programs that center in the schools, teaching these kids, and the kids go home and teach their families. They're much more receptive to some of these new ideas. And it's true in the United States. Some of these things that the kids were talking about and asking me about, just to be a little bit aware. You know, there, we were talking about favorite foods, and I heard candy so many times, you know. Well, these kids don't have that candy. These kids up in these mountain villages, they never see candy. And that, you know, that's a positive. But
that's what our children identify with.
Mm-hmm.
It's good.
Mm-hmm. And so I think that these things do help. It does help to write these letters to Bread for the World or to your Congress people. Or to your bishop, and work in your congregations. I mean, never mind about health in the United States, but just within our congregations, we've got many differences. To be in solidarity with these poor people, even if you're not sending that $200 directly to a health clinic in someplace in Peru, you can still be praying for those people. So it is something. I don't say that those little things are drops in the bucket. I think they do begin to make changes. Any other questions? Thank you. I appreciate all your participation.